Blog Talk Radio.
Five Lincoln 103, five Lincoln 102, Lincoln 103 and 102.
Responding 2401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
Henry 8, Henry 9, respond to gate 437 Bravo for your dignitary detail. 3K911, unattended 400 lower level near carousel 4, black bag. GTA in progress, 401 parking structure, section 4 boy.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
450 passenger onboard aircraft.
Control 2 Frankie Lemon Brown.
484 suspect, the female, Hispanic, 28 years of age. Blue G, no further.
Control, high Frank, 401 is a route.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to a live edition of the Private Officer Talk Radio Network. You are in the LP Zone, Loss Prevention. This show is all about those of you who work in the plainclothes industry of loss prevention or mall security, those of you who are retail investigators, or maybe you're a shop manager or owner. We want to welcome you today on this balmy, hot, sticky day, July 5th, the day after July 4th, 2011. I'm your show co-host and host, the guru himself, founder and CEO of Private Officer International, Rick McCann. Seriously, on a serious note, we're very, very patriotic, and we're still just can't believe some of the celebrations that went on over the weekend. I hope that you had some time to enjoy them. You and the family, I hope that you were able to get out and see some fireworks someplace and to spend some R&R time with your wife, children, girlfriend, significant other, because that's what it's all about. You know, we work hard and we are really in very dangerous positions and situations all the time. And when holidays come, hopefully you are one of the lucky ones and you did have the time off. I myself, well, I did work part of the holiday, but that was my own choosing. But we did enjoy some fireworks, unlike many of you who probably went to your local park or festivity site. I chose to do it a different way, and actually it really was better for me because I hate the traffic, the crowds. If you've never been to the National Mall in Washington, D.C. to watch the spectacular fireworks on July 4th, that's one place you will need to go. Put that on your bucket list because although it is just horrific with traffic and hundreds of thousands of people, it is spectacular. It is just, it will make you proud to be an American for sure. It is a beautiful, beautiful show there on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. Great fireworks, great music by the military bands, and you really can't get, you know, a better celebration. Well, I saw that last night, but I didn't have to make my way through the traffic or the crowds. We actually was able to watch part of it on a streaming internet site, so we got to see some of the fireworks in D.C. Beautiful, I'm telling you, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing to experience. Oftentimes, they do record it for a later showing on either PBS or some other network. You might want to search that out and check it out because it's well worth it. Also, I got to see some of the fireworks and some after pictures in Nashville, Tennessee. Another, I'm telling you folks, the show in Nashville is just spectacular. It's right there on the Cumberland River, downtown. Riverfront Park, over the Batman building, if you're familiar with Nashville. It's just spectacular. And great music, of course. A lot of great pre-fireworks activities for the family, for the children, and it's just a great place to celebrate the 4th of July. Of course, there are many other locations across the country. I also got to see some pictures shortly after the fireworks in Mobile, Alabama. Mobile, Alabama shoots their fireworks across the Mobile River and at the USS Alabama Park, where they have a beautiful military park with ships and planes. And if you haven't been there, you might want to put that on your to-do list, because they have a beautiful, spectacular park open year-round to, I'm telling you, it's just great, great fun there, and especially July 4th when they shoot the fireworks over the water, and it just lights up the sky and the water, the mirrors. The fireworks is just beautiful. All right, well, enough about that. At any rate, we hope that you really got out and enjoyed some fun someplace along with your family. And, well, unfortunately now it's back to the grind, back to the grind. We do have some breaking news here to tell you about. Just came off from the wire. I don't know if you followed this case. I have tried to follow it in the initial beginning of the case before it went to trial. I followed it regularly. But a jury in Florida has just acquitted, found not guilty, Casey Anthony. Casey Anthony was a young lady in Florida who was on trial for the murder of her daughter, Kaylee Anthony. And they have just announced at 2:15 Eastern time, so that's been about 45 minutes ago, that they could not find Casey Anthony guilty, and they found her guilty of some other minor charges, lying to law enforcement during the investigation. She was found guilty of that. I'm sure she'll probably get some time on that, but the more serious charge of murder, she has been found not guilty. And in a murder trial, it's just, it's difficult. Unless you're there, unless you have the smoking gun, unless you have an eyewitness, unless you have some hard, concrete evidence to put that person on the scene with the gun or the instrument that caused the death in their hand, it's almost impossible to get a conviction, as was the case in the O.J. Simpson trial. And so the jury said, no, we just cannot all agree. Now, maybe one or two jurors agreed. Maybe a few of them thought, yes, she was guilty. But overall, they did not have a concession. They all have to agree. And obviously, in this case, they did not. So breaking news, if you have followed this case in Florida, then you know who I'm talking about, but Casey Anthony has been found not guilty, acquitted of murder and the death of her daughter, Kaylee. However, she has been found guilty of the more minor crimes, the less serious crimes of deceptiveness and lying to police during the investigation. So I guess I have not seen what her sentence will be on those charges. It may be just time served. I believe she's been incarcerated since day one. And I guess we'll just have to see. But on a more serious charge of murder, not guilty. Who's to say? Really, who's to say what happened? Who's to say if she did it? It really is just so difficult these days. It really is. All right, well, if you've been keeping up with the weather the last couple of weeks, I've been telling you about the severe storms in the south. We had severe tornadoes during the spring, and this seems to be a topic for many security and law enforcement departments as they begin preparing for yet another very serious season we're coming into already in this month, July. We will begin the hurricane season. And if you live along the Gulf Coast, the Atlantic Coast, if you're in Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, Louisiana, you know what this time of the year means. You've got a few more weeks of calm, a few more weeks of preparation, but then who knows? According to the National Storm Prediction Center, hurricanes this year, I believe there's going to be four or five major and eight hurricanes that will make landfall. So be prepared. A few months ago, we did a great series about preparing for the storms. You might want to go back and listen to those programs. It was a three-part series on storm preparation and response. Very informative training. You might want to go back and take a listen to those particular radio shows because it will help you to be prepared personally with your family as well as a loss prevention or security professional or a law enforcement officer. I also want to encourage you to go back and listen to the Alzheimer's response and recognition shows that I did about a month ago now. We've had a lot of accolades, a lot of emails from people who really enjoyed those programs. So this is something that you're going to come across in your duties, in your job, and also in your family, personally be touched by Alzheimer's disease. So really, it's some great stuff about sundowning and about wandering and about being lost and recognition, and you might want to go back and check out those shows as well. Coming up in our programs next Monday on our regular private officer radio broadcast, we have a great show coming up. It's called 1015 Juvenile in Custody. 1015 is the national 10 codes for law enforcement, which means a prisoner in custody, and you're going to really need to listen to this show as well. We'll be talking about how much force you can use with a juvenile to detain them or apprehend them. We'll be talking about your responsibilities and obligations whenever you have a juvenile in custody. We will be talking about releasing the juvenile, whether you have to release them to a parent, a guardian, an adult, or you can release them to yourself, what the legal obligations and consequences will be depending on your choice. And we will also be talking about the increase of serious juvenile crimes. And we'll be talking a lot about how to handle juveniles overall. So Monday coming up, July the 11th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Private Officer Talk Radio Network, 1015, Juvenile in Custody. Juvenile in Custody. You won't want to miss that show. Also coming up on the 18th of this month, we will have a special show. We will be talking to a number of private security officers who have been involved in armed confrontations. Join us for Armed and Dangerous. Armed and Dangerous. We will be interviewing a number of security officers involved in shootouts with armed suspects. One occurred in Nashville, Tennessee, a number of months ago at a bowling alley where a gang rivalry, I guess, happened between two gangs. They began a shootout. Security was involved. And join us next on the 18th, not next week, but the following week, and we will be talking to them and several others about armed confrontations. There is a major increase in armed confrontations between private security, and we'll be talking about why the sudden increase, why the drastic increase, as well as talking with individual security officers who have been involved in those armed confrontations. So that's on the 18th of this month, 7:30 p.m. That's a Monday evening, Armed and Dangerous. Hey, if you want to be a guest or a co-host, either on our regular broadcast or on the LP Zone, send me an email, radio@privateofficer.com. radio@privateofficer.com. We'd love to hear from you if you are interested in hearing a specific topic, something that we have not covered. We'll be glad to get that on the air for you. If you'd like to be a guest to talk about that topic or co-host, just all you got to do is send me an email at radio@privateofficer.com, radio@privateofficer.com. Now, also, you know, whether you're listening now live or later on by podcast or on demand, you can send me an email if you want to submit some news, some training events, you want me to broadcast or announce something that's happening in your area, maybe some special loss prevention seminar happening at your store that's open to the public or to other security professionals, we'll be glad to do that. Just send me an email at radio@privateofficer.com. We love to hear from people that are listening to our program. So feel free anytime just to send us an email at radio@privateofficer.com. We'll be glad to announce just about anything. We've announced engagements. We've announced births. We announced birthdays, anniversaries, you name it. Send us an email. Also, you can contact us or follow us on the web day or night, 24/7, 365. We have a pretty large and ever-growing footprint on the internet. Now, I can give you a whole bunch of web links to go to. Facebook.com/privateofficer.com, Twitter.com/privateofficer, yada, yada, yada. But really, folks, the best, the easiest, the most simplest way to link to all of our sites is just by going to our main web page, and that is www.privateofficer.com, www.privateofficer.com. And right there on the homepage, you can link to our Facebook page, which is pretty active. There was a time when we weren't really using Facebook, but we are now. We're very active on that page, update it regularly. And you can friend us there. You can comment there. You can follow us on Facebook. You can also link from our homepage to Twitter. Now, Twitter is something that we use several times a day to announce upcoming radio shows, to announce the news, to announce breaking news alerts, to announce BOLOs. We use it. It's connected to our news blog, and really that is a great way to follow us as well. Be sure to join our own private officer forums and network right there from the homepage. Just click on forums and become a member. We have over 650 members internationally in many countries that join the conversation. We have several hundred videos, photographs. It's a great place to network, to talk about the industry right there on our own forums. You do not have to be a member. So far, we have left that open to anyone in the industry or someone who, you know, wants to talk about security or law enforcement, public safety. So be sure to join us right there at privateofficer.ning or just go to our homepage and click on and join us. We really are trying to have many services and products and training really to service the private security industry like no other organization or association. And I think so far we've done a pretty good job. We've been at this for 7.5 years. We're really starting to take off. We have members in 28 countries. If you are not a member of the association, we want to encourage you to join. Go to www.privateofficer.com. Become a member today, because members do have over 40 benefits, member benefits. Many people do not take advantage of those, but we do offer a substantial number of benefits to our members. We also want to encourage you to come out and see us at the Midwest Security Police Conference and Expo. That's going to be, in about 6 weeks from now, August the 22nd and 3rd, I believe it is, at the Midwest Security Police Conference. That's in Peoria, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. We're going to be there both speaking, as well as we will have a booth. We will also be giving a presentation. Check out their website at mspce.com. mspce.com. We will also be at the American ASIS, American Security Industrial, blah, blah, blah. Yep, we'll be there too. That's coming up. Their national conference will be in Florida, in Orlando, Florida this year. And we will be there. If you are a member of ASIS or not, feel free to join us there at their national conference in Orlando, Florida. And let me see if I can get the date for you. I believe September the 19th through the 22nd. September the 19th through the 22nd, it will be in Orlando, Florida, the ASIS International 57th Seminar and Exhibit. That's free, by the way, as is the Midwest Security Police Conference and Expo. That's also free. So we encourage you to come out and see us there. We're also speaking this month on the 19th in New Orleans. We'll be in New Orleans, Louisiana, and we're looking forward to being there. We're also speaking in Dallas, Texas, so come on out and join us. Be part of the group, the networking, and the training. We have many training seminars going on right now. Several trainers and myself are out. If you or your company are interested in having a training seminar, whether it be loss prevention, whether it be use of force, legal liability for private security, or workplace violence, just send us an email at trainingdivision@privateofficer.com. trainingdivision@privateofficer.com. We have a great show coming up, a little bit of training today. We're going to be talking about refunding, the cat and mouse game, refunding. Now, refunding has gone back, I guess, as far as the beginning of retail. I've been in retail security. I was in retail loss prevention in the 70s and 80s. It was very popular then. It has become even more popular. So we'll be talking about the cat and mouse game of refunding coming up. We're going to take just a moment, and we'll be right back. Kind of patriotic, wasn't it? That was a great little song for July the 4th. We want to bring a little bit of LP news to you. This coming out of Polk County, Florida. Two women were arrested there for shoplifting at Target department store. They stole more than $759 worth of merchandise. The two filled their shopping cart full of merchandise. But they didn't know they were actually under the close eye of loss prevention. Of course, the entire incident was also captured on video. And police have arrested Tambrel Fullwood and Denian Archibald and charged both of them with felony, actually grand theft larceny. Coming out of San Antonio, Texas, a distraught man who had been told by store security that his girlfriend had been caught shoplifting, sped off, and struck and killed a 70-year-old in the parking lot of the HEB supermarket there in San Antonio. According to police, the suspect had been in a conversation with store security, who informed him that the girlfriend was under arrest for shoplifting. The suspect then accelerated at a high rate of speed, hitting and killing Charles Simpson, 70, as he walked across the parking lot, minding his own business, on the way to his own vehicle. Police are looking still for the suspect, and I believe that they're going to catch him. This story came to me yesterday out of Jacksonville, Florida, and it's just another sign of how stupid and how crazy people are. This came from Jacksonville, Florida. A mentally challenged Publix grocery store employee was severely beaten over the weekend after he made an off-the-cuff comment about a Georgia Bulldog t-shirt to two people. Two brothers have been arrested and charged with aggravated assault and resisting arrest. Police say James Wall, 26, and Ryan Keyes, 27, punched the mentally challenged employee 8 to 10 times in the face, beating him severely, breaking teeth. When police arrested the suspects, they couldn't even tell the officers what the man had said. They just thought it was something, a wisecrack, and so they pulverized the Publix store employee in front of the store on the sidewalk for no reason. And we hope that the judge sees this as what it is. Two idiots out of control who'd been drinking, and we hope that they get the maximum punishment allowed. This story came out of Texas. It's not exactly loss prevention related, but it's another stupid news item, another stupid incident. Police in Sweetwater, Texas, arrested a man, 22-year-old Carlos Rico, after he stopped his vehicle on Interstate 20, a major interstate, near Abilene, Texas, and threw his 4-year-old son out of the car like a bag of trash and sped off, never to return. Police were able to track him down. According to investigators, he had choked the boy, hoping to suffocate him before tossing him from the vehicle. What kind of animals do we have walking around this earth that anyone would do that to their own child? Martinsville, Indiana, police there say that they've arrested a 11-year-old boy who purposely shot and killed his brother. Andrew Fry was shot in the head with a .22 caliber gun. Police say the 11-year-old boy knew what he was doing, and they have charged him as an adult with murder of his brother. We want to acknowledge a heroic situation occurring in Watsonville, California, early yesterday morning. Security at a restaurant used a taser to subdue a suspect in an attempted murder case. Police said that Juan Carlos Medina Reyes, 21, was tasered and subdued by private security after he stabbed a man several times during a fight outside of the restaurant. Two security officers gave chase. They were deployed their taser, and they were able to handcuff and detain the suspect. When police arrived, all they had to do was put them in the cruiser. Good job, guys, and we'll be tracking them down to recognize and award them appropriately. A Memphis police officer was shot and killed at the DoubleTree Hotel, which is a very nice, exclusive hotel down in Memphis, Tennessee, downtown, over the weekend. when he responded to a domestic dispute. Police say that the officer was shot in the head. Timothy Warren had been on the police force for 8 years, and his coworkers say that he was a great man. And, of course, he will be missed. Four police officers have been killed over the weekend. And this year, more than 80 police officers killed, and we're on track for another record, death. Police officers killed in the line of duty is terrible. In Dayton, Ohio, police there are letting you know that the Apple stores are becoming targets for burglars as well as robbers. Police nationwide actually have issued an alert to security, loss prevention, and law enforcement. Apple stores continue to be hit nationwide by both burglars in the overnight hours as well as armed robbers. The latest one was in Rochester, New York, where four men were arrested after stealing $15,000 in Apple merchandise. They say that the suspects went in with ski masks and stole the merchandise. In Miami Township, Ohio, police there say that several suspects broke into an Apple store at the mall, stealing iMacs and MacBooks, thousands of dollars worth of merchandise. This is happening all over the nation. In fact, last month in L.A., Los Angeles, a security officer shot and killed an armed robber who was trying to rob an Apple store early in the morning. So this is an alert. If you are in security or loss prevention or law enforcement, be alert, because this is becoming a national trend, a national crime spree, actually, by many people, not just one gang or one person. This is, you know, Apple computers, iPods, and different things. They are hot commodity. Also this weekend, several retail employees, loss prevention employees, have been stabbed during the apprehension of shoplifters coming out of San Jose, California. A Macy's loss prevention agent was stabbed while detaining a suspect. Police say that the suspect, as he was being brought back into the store, turned and stabbed the security officer numerous times before fleeing. He is still at large. The loss prevention agency was taken to the hospital and will be okay. In Clinton, Mississippi, a man there Saturday stabbed a Walmart security agent. Clinton, Mississippi is a suburb of Jackson, Mississippi, the Walmart Supercenter on Highway 80, according to police. The shoplifter stabbed the employee in the parking lot after shoplifting a number of items. Police there don't have the suspect in custody. They say the employee will be okay. In Rome, Georgia, which is in the northern part of the state, police have arrested a trio of shoplifters who was hitting a number of stores. Police say that they arrested Talia Barber, Ebony Burt, and Calvin Carter of Atlanta, Georgia. All were charged with felony shoplifting and possession of stolen property after they stole from Walmart, Kohl's, and a number of stores. They recovered almost $4,000 in merchandise in that shoplifting spree, including 38 shirts and 17 pairs of shorts. Hey, one thing I do want you to notice here, 38 shirts and 17 pairs of shorts. What does that tell you? It tells me that these were not for personal use. These were not for the family. These were something that they were going to sell on the internet, the flea market, eBay, you know. Chattanooga, Tennessee, a deputy sheriff responded to a shoplifting at a Target and got into a hustle and tussle with a female suspect. She's been arrested and is incarcerated. Bradenton, Florida, a deputy sheriff from the Manatee Sheriff's Department had to use his taser against Esther Goodman and Brianna Smith after they resisted arrest after they stole $459 worth of clothing. Police said that the officers justly used his taser, deployed his taser to subdue them. All right, today we're going to talk about something that, like I said earlier, this has been going on forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever, but it is something that's getting worse. If you're involved in retail loss prevention, if you are a security agent at the mall, if you are a retail manager, then you know what I'm talking about. We're talking today about the cat and mouse refund game. Refunding has always been an issue, always, as far back as probably stores have been in business. It's just such an easy way to make quick cash. It's it's just been an issue forever. It's an easy way for dope heads and others looking for a quick and easy way to make cash to come in and steal and refund and get the cash and walk out the door. Now, there are many variations of the game, and we're going to be talking for a few moments about the 6 methods of refunding fraud, because that's what it is. It's a felony refunding fraud. Of course, you do have the snatch and grab. Those people come in, they'll grab something off the shelf, and they will immediately, quite brazenly, take it to the refund desk, take it to the customer service desk, and refund it just like it was their own, just like if they had bought it. They come in empty-handed and go right to a specific aisle. Most of the time, they know where they're headed. In my experience, they usually go to the hardware or to the houseware, to the cookware, and they either take electronics or they take some hard good item that they can quickly refund for $50, $60, $100. They don't go overboard. They're smart enough. They don't try to refund something that's valued at $400 or $500. They're not going after the real high-ticket item. They're going after something that's not going to be too suspicious. I've had a number of people, when I worked retail, go and take fishing reels, go to take tackle boxes and things of that nature where you can refund for $30, $40, $50, just a quick hit. But imagine if they were doing this quick hit store after store. This is a job for many refunders, for many shoplifters, for many people. Today, this is their job. They go from store to store. So if they're getting a quick hit from you for $50 or $60, and they do this 4 or 5 times a day, they've just made a quick $300 or $400. That's pretty good for one day. And they didn't have to work very hard for it. So oftentimes they will snatch and grab from the shelf something that is not going to be high ticket and something that they can probably get away with quite easily. Something that's not going to cause a lot of suspicion or a lot of hassle in the refund process. One of the things about this type of refund fraud is that you really have to be on your toes. You really have to be alert before you can arrest or apprehend them. You have to know 100% that they came in the door empty-handed. Not only did they come into the door empty-handed, but you have to observe A to Z their movements. You have to observe their movement throughout the store. You have to observe them in the retrieval of the merchandise from the shelf or the rack or the rounder. You have to see that merchandise come off the rack, off the shelf, and then watch them as they proceed through the refund stage. Now, the problem with this, and I want to caution you, from experience, I can tell you, you may see suspect A come through the door empty-handed. 10 minutes later or 15 minutes later, you may see him at the refund, the customer service desk, trying to refund something and try to apprehend him. And then you get in trouble, and then you get sued. Why? Because it was a legitimate purchase. His wife came in and met him in the store or his girlfriend, and you didn't see that part, and she handed over the merchandise. and she went on to shopping in the woman's department, or she left the store. So you've got to be very careful that you see the whole process, that you don't get in on the end part of it, that you don't get in on the middle. You have to be aware that this man or woman did enter the store empty-handed, that you did watch them go to the hardware department, that you did see him pick up an electric drill, that you did see her take two blouses off the rack and curl them up and stick them in a bag and bring them to the customer service desk. You've got to watch the whole process. And if you have video access, if you are watching from your vantage point, from your office, of course you want to record it. You want to document it. Back in the old days, we didn't have that luxury. We were floor walkers. We were up in the catwalk. We had to observe, run around the store like a chicken with the head cut off. We had to observe everything the best that we could from our vantage point without the benefit of video, without the benefit of cameras. So be very careful in this type of refund fraud. Another type of refund fraud is called the receipt switch or the receipt refund. Many times they will get a receipt off from the ground or in the garbage or in the parking lot, and they will come back and they will find that particular item, and now they have a legitimate receipt. And guess what? Instead of a store credit, they're going to get cash-a-roo. They're going to get the cash, the greenbacks, in their hand because they have a receipt. It is very important that you, your employees, the store manager, the maintenance people understand the importance of not only disposing of any receipts that you find on the floor, the ground, the parking lot, but tear them up, destroy them, because receipts are valuable to refunders. And if they can get a receipt in their possession, if they can find a receipt in the garbage can, if they can find the receipt in a bag, I personally, and I'm pretty bad about this to be honest, I will buy something at the store, and I'm like most men. I go in, I know what I want, I get it, I buy it, I get out of the store as quickly as I can. I don't look around a lot unless I have a lot of money to spend, which that's not very often, but I don't look around a lot. So I will buy what I want, come out the store. If it's something I'm going to use that day, for instance, a pair of sneakers or shoes, I may toss the receipt because I'm not going to return it. And there's a lot of people who will come out of the store and just toss the receipt on the ground, in the cigarette ashtray, in the trash can near the door. And this is a refunder's paradise. This is payday for the refunder. So even though they may be refunding at the desk with a receipt, that does not necessarily mean that it's legit. It doesn't mean at all that it was theirs. They could have picked it up from anybody. In fact, oftentimes people will give someone their receipt, a conspiracy, a collusion, to go into the store and shop with that same item. So you have to be careful. Again, this is another situation where you have to have them under complete surveillance. Know when they came in the store, watch their removal of the product from the shelf or the rack, and then watch them whip out the receipt as they approach the refund desk, and of course get it all on video and you've got a good case. But if it's something that you only suspect, something that you only have bits and pieces, no, it's not going to be enough for a good stop. You're going to have to build a case on that person, get a tag, get a license plate, get some identification, get something. What I failed to mention in the beginning was recently Walmart, Sears, and Kohl's has reduced their internal policy on refunds. Walmart will refund anything to anyone. If it's just a small $20 item, they will give you cash back every time. It doesn't matter. If it's a little bit bigger, then they may give you a store credit. A big deal. You get a store credit. Then what? Then you go buy the item with the store credit. And then you sell it on the internet. You still get it for free. You know? You sell it on the street. You still got it for free. Kohl's has thrown their doors wide open a number of months ago. No receipt, no problem. They will take anything back. It doesn't matter. Now, if you don't have a receipt, they will give it to you. They will give the refund to you at a sales price. Big deal. Whoopee. So I've got something that I stole, and you're going to give me 20% less. Oh, terrible, terrible. You know, really, big deal. It's a $200 item, and you're only going to give me $180. Oh, poor me. My heart's bleeding. Come on. They've thrown the door to refund fraud and shoplifting wide open. And again, you cannot accuse them if you just suspect them. You can't go up to someone and go, hey, I think you just stole that. I'm not sure. I didn't see it myself, but I think you did. That's not going to work. You have to be very careful what you do and when you do it. But I can't believe that these stores have reduced their refunding policy knowing the big picture. But I did personally talk with Kohl's department store before going on the air today. And a manager told me that this was a policy to help their customers assure them that they could refund things without a lot of hassle or problems, but they are particular. In some cases, they will only issue a store credit. Oh, big deal. Like I said, a store credit, that means I can go buy whatever I want. Maybe I won't sell the product. Maybe I won't, take the merchandise and put it on the internet. Maybe it's something I really want. So here I've stole one item, refunded it, and you're giving me store credit to go out and buy whatever I want in your store. It still doesn't make sense. Another form of refund fraud is the bad check or credit card aspect of it, and this really is a pretty significant type of refund fraud. Many times stores don't have – back in the day – back in the 80s, there was a policy that if you bought something with a check, there was a 10-day hold. They would not refund your merchandise. But because everyone uses a check or a debit card or a credit card these days, that policy has gone out of the door for the most part. So a very significant part of refunding fraud comes from the use of bad checks, stolen checks, bad credit card or debit cards. It's very easy now, rather than try to be caught for shoplifting, for a refunder to come in with a stolen check or even a check that has bad information on it, which we are also going to be doing a show about in the upcoming weeks about how checks are used to steal from retailers. But come in with a check that is either stolen or bad, or a credit card, and purchase the merchandise, and tomorrow bring it back to a different store, and they will refund the merchandise. 9 times out of 10, they will get cash in their hands. So if you go to 5 or 10 stores every day and you buy merchandise with bad checks, and then you take them in the next day for a refund, you're making pretty good money. We have caught numerous people over the years who did this for a living. They went from metro area to metro area. They would rent a cheap, dumpy hotel. They would take their stolen or otherwise no good check to the store. They would buy hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of merchandise, especially around the Christmas season, and then they would return it for hard cash and out the door. They're doing the same with stolen credit cards. Be very careful, again, before you make the stop, before you make the apprehension, before you try to detain the suspects, that you have knowledge that it is a bad check, that you've called the bank, that you've verified. That's why it's very important that if you are part of a retail chain, that you have some type of internal communication between your stores, that you have some type of hot list of suspected shoplifters, bad check writers, stolen credit cards, that you alert each other. The several retailers that I work for, even way back in the 80s, we had that communication. We had internal intranet where we continuously got information from other loss prevention agents and other stores alerting us that so-and-so was out writing checks or so-and-so, be on the lookout for them. They're stealing XYZ merchandise. So it's very important, especially with this type of theft, this type of fraud, that you do communicate in a store between all of the stores in your area as well as all the stores within your chain. So bad check and credit card fraud is definitely one of the more prolific types of refund fraud, and you really have to be up on your laws, and you have to really have them under direct observation and know ahead of time what you're getting into, because otherwise you're open for a lawsuit. Another method of receipt refund fraud is internal theft. Many employees steal and then refund it. We have had case after case after case where employees will steal from the store that they work at and then take it to another store within the chain across town or to the next city and refund it. One of my largest capers ever in the hundreds of thousands of dollars was between a group of employees who was stealing and then spreading the wealth. They would take the merchandise to other stores within the chain outside of the area. They would, on their days off, they would actually travel to other stores in other cities and towns and refund all the merchandise they were stealing from our store. And they were doing it for 4 or 5 years. And when we finally caught them, it was simply through an audit of refunds, checking, you know, both in-store refunds as well as area refunds within our chain. And I kept seeing the same employee names over and over, no receipt, no receipt, no receipt, refunding clothing, hardline goods, whatever they could, and getting hard cash and walking out the door without question. So internal theft refund is also a substantial method of refund fraud. Again, you have to be really good at surveillance. You have to be very good at observation and see them in their merchandise retrieval. They will oftentimes hide the merchandise within their own department under shelving, hidden in the rounders. Oftentimes, they will take the merchandise to the back, to the stock room, and hide it and retrieve it later. So if you see an employee who continuously, at least once every few weeks, every month, is bringing back merchandise and refunding without receipt, even if they do buy legit in the store, they're probably stealing. And remember, collusion between employees is very prevalent in big box stores and even boutiques. One employee will go through another employee's register and they will just give away the store, and you have to be on your toes. Many stores have certain registers that employees have to go through, and other stores don't have that policy. So know that an employee can go through a friend's register, buy one item, and have 5 items put in their bag. The other 4 items are brought back for what? For refund, of course, for cash, for easy greenbacks. And this is a significant way of retail fraud. So you have to be on your game when employees are going through the register, especially. But be alert. You know, you have to do your audits, check your refund audits regularly, call your other stores within your chain and give them a list of employee names, see if they've been refunding things over there recently without receipts, and that's how you're going to catch that. That's how you're going to stop those employees. Another very easy way at refund fraud is you buy one, steal one. Buy one, steal one. We see this all the time. A person will buy a specific item, get a receipt, come back, and steal the same item and refund it. Again, be very careful that you have them under surveillance from point A to point Z through the whole process before you make that stop. Now, there is one other thing that I want to let you know about. One other thing that you have to be aware of, and that is legitimate refunders who come in and do self-refunding. I have caught a number of people who come in, they bought a shirt, it was the wrong size, and instead of waiting in line, instead of going to the customer service desk, what do? They go out to the department with their merchandise that they legitimately bought, they look for the right size, and they switch it out themselves. What does that look like to you and me? Looks like they're shoplifting. Looks like they're stealing. When in fact, it's just some stupid customer who's bought something that either had a tear or didn't fit, and so they brought it back, and they've done a self-refund. Now, you stop them. Did they break any laws? No. Have they committed any crime? No. Are they stupid? Yes. This is actually an easy way for them to also file a lawsuit against you if you accuse them of shoplifting. So you can stop them to investigate. You can stop them to ask, what are you doing? But hopefully they have a receipt for the legitimate merchandise that they're trying to self-return, self-refund, and exchange, and you'll be able to figure that out and release them without any further incident. But, you know, it takes all kinds. So very quickly, these are the ways that people commit refund fraud these days. They will snatch and grab the merchandise off the shelf and brazenly take it back to the customer service or refund desk and get cash. They will pick up receipts from inside the store, around the registers, as well as out in the parking lot or the trash. Employees will save people's receipts, and they will use those receipts as refunds, quick and easy. People will use bad checks, stolen checks, bad credit cards, stolen credit cards. They will buy merchandise and refund it the next day. People will steal ice from one store and bring it to the other. And, of course, internal theft is very, very high on the refund fraud. That's all the time we have today. We hope that you've enjoyed the show. Be sure to join us on Monday. We have a great show called 1015 Juvenile in Custody. Till then, be safe, be blessed. We'll see you back here on the Private Officer Talk Radio Network.